Hello everyone, and welcome to this session. My name is Petter Meraak, and I'm the business director for what we in Microsoft call Cloud and Enterprise. It's about a third of our total revenue and the fastest growing, so it's pretty exciting. First, I want to have a little show of hands, because I definitely need your help in this session. So first of all, who came here to have any kind of product demo? Any kind of, like, you know, I want to see what Microsoft is producing right now. Nobody. Okay, good. So that's one hurdle that I've passed. And the other one is that I have an insane amount of slides, and I'm not joking. So I need your help in getting through them. I think there is a message throughout, but if you start nodding or you're doing your phones and stuff like that, then I'll pick that up and I'll move more rapidly into the presentation. So the name of this presentation is Future Decoded, and clearly with a lofty title like that, I need to have at least two warnings. So the first warning is that I'm a technology optimist, and that means that I will try and convince you that technology is really important, and so that you need to pay close attention. I will also try and convince you that you being here in this session, and hopefully brought a lot of your coworkers with you to Nick, is really, really smart. The other thing, the other warning that I have is that it's about the future. I'm going to talk about the future, and I'll get back to that in a little bit. So what I'm going to cover is a little bit about why I'll talk a little bit about why technology is important, why it matters, why it's important that you guys are here. Then I'm going to give you some insights or perspectives to how you should look upon innovations and new technology, to give you some tools, perhaps, that you can leverage and use when you assess technology that may or may not be important to you. And then I'll move to what we're doing right now, but also what we're doing further ahead. So some of the stuff that Microsoft Research is working on, and some of the stuff we believe will be critical to see the continuation of the success that's led to this digital economy. And finally, I will cover getting there from here, which I think is the important bit. And that is, what should you, or some advice from us, to what you should be doing or thinking about right now, which will bring you on a path forward in the right direction. But first of all, I want to start with a smile. I think that's generally a good idea, but I want to start with this smile in particular, because it is one of the many reasons why I'm a technology optimist. Because this is a smile from a guy that lives in Africa. And because of technology that we take for granted and some smart innovations on top of it, he has been given a brand new opportunity and a brand new future. And that's also why I believe that technology is the, one of the means for us to both get better lives, but also save the planet in the process. So because now in Africa, cellular technology or cell phones is pretty much abundant, most of Africa is covered or getting covered, and because of the smartness that in that and the ability to internet and inability to on doing smart innovations on stuff like banking and microfinancing and market information, they are able to get better means suitable for their situation to start to plan better, get better prices for what they produce, and also finance smarter crop building. And if you think about the problem, over half of the population in Africa is working now on producing food. But even still, there is a $40 billion deficit. So they're spending about $40 billion buying food from outside of Africa to Africa, even though half of the population is working on it. So with smart use of technology, they're now able to buy fertilizing, they're able to get better information on the market, produce better to specifications, join together, and then provide better prices for their production. So that's a very interesting story, and I think you could read more about it on Bill Gates' blogs, and I suggest that you do, or even subscribe to his blog. So the second bit is about the future. Predicting the future is a very fickle business because it's quite hard and we usually end up getting it wrong. And I don't know how many of you have ever read some future predictions and look at what people are saying and seeing how much is actually getting to be fulfilled. And this is a small picture from the movie Back to the Future. It never is that way. We'd be wearing sort of aluminum helmets and flying hoverboards if that was the case. But I think what my point is that it's directionally correct. And so it gives you a good sort of perspective on where we're heading. Now, outside of having a ridiculous long title on this slide, I think it's also something that's quite correct. And if you look at the reason why predicting the future is quite hard, it is because of three things. So the first one is time. We have a tendency to underestimate the amount of time things take. And so when it takes longer than you have the patience for or the economy to do, then you stop disbelieving and then strange things occur. And so when you assess innovations, you know, pay attention to time, and it usually takes longer than people expect, but it has a tendency to be more revolutionary than they think. So that's a good sort of thing to keep in mind. The second thing that most people tend to forget is to account for disruption. So when you think about a technology or a specific purpose, you usually think about it the way it was intended or the way it was described to you, and then you exaggerate a little bit, and then you extrapolate, meaning that you just, you know, what if we had 10 of these or 100 of these, and then, you know, bring that forward, and that gives you a picture of where you're going to end up. But when I talk about disruption, let's use the genome example as a good example. So in just a few years, the cost of sequencing the human genome has gone from millions to a mere thousands of dollars. It's a decrease in time and cost 27-fold. That is such a staggering change that now you can all of a sudden start to use genetics and genetics research applicable to patient care, and that people usually don't think about. And to make fun of ourselves a little bit, I brought this little piece of video.
Steve Jobs goes to Macworld and he pulls out this iPhone. What was your first reaction when you saw that?
$500 fully subsidized with a plan? I said, that is the most expensive phone in the world, and it doesn't appeal to business customers because it doesn't have a keyboard, which makes it not a very...
So, I think that was pretty funny. If I play the whole clip, you'd see it's more nuanced than that, but that's not my point. My point is, even the people situated as the most central locations are prone to doing this mistake. The final little bit of lens that I want you to apply to whatever I say and whatever technology that you get to assess is the power of innovation and human ingenuity. You could argue that that's the same as the prior lens, which was about disruption, but I'll explain a little bit. So what typically happens is when somebody invents something or comes up with a solution, it's for a specific purpose. But what we've seen time and time again is that when you let that innovation loose on people, which may not understand or even care about what it was intended for, they find new uses for it. And those new uses are oftentimes much more exciting than the original inventor's thoughts and ideas. And that frequently also happens. So SMS is an example. It was made to do text messaging between phone centrals, but then it turned out to be a billion-dollar industry. But as a technology optimist, I've obviously been trying to be clever. I've found a fitting quote from another, but not so likely, technology optimist. Jonas Gahr Støre, for the ones that don't know Norwegian politics, is the leader of the biggest opposition party. And he said that all technologies sink nations and civilizations. And if you look, you know, closely on history, you would see that that's actually quite true. And once you start to lose your grip and not apply the latest technology, somebody who does have better technology will come and surpass you. And then you're left to struggle. And with new technologies, you have an opportunity to build for a more prosperous future. And that's why I think it's really important to pay close attention to technology and the trends and how it can be relevant for your industry and your business. Technology, as you've probably seen time and time again, we've been fortunate in Norway over the last 4 or 5 weeks, the press has actually started to care. And so a lot of people have been involved in the discussion. And the national organizations of businesses had a big conference this a few weeks back where the topic was remix, with a focus on the opportunities and threats afforded by technology. And if you look at what customers are asking for, and if you look at what customers care about, they care about the services, they care about new experiences, and that they're willing to pay for. And if you look at what businesses usually provide and what the customers are asking for, it's usually quite different. The businesses think, oh, we're perfect, we're delivering what the customer wants, but if you ask the customer, it's quite different. And the central theme here is the digitalization. And with the use of technology, the ability to move closer to your customer, create new services and new value adds to whatever you provide to the market has been totally disrupted. And there's numbers of examples of that. I won't bore you with it, but it suffices to say that it's really important that you start to think about how you can leverage that in your business. And if you read, and Norway typically has been very good at leveraging new technology, but if you read the latest Harvard Business Review, it's now placing Norway in the stall-out category. Because although we have a lot of new technology, our way of rethinking the way we work, rethinking our processes, rethinking and digitizing our manual processes has started to stall. And that doesn't look well for what the market and the customers wants going forward. Our new CEO, when he started, Satya, that replaced Steve Ballmer, as you just saw in the video, he started his job saying that our industry does not respect tradition, it respects innovation. And I actually think that applies to all industries. And so to talk to you a little bit about what we are thinking about in Microsoft in terms of how we think about technology and trends and how that's shaping what we do, what we can help you do, and what we can do together, that's sort of the main piece of my talk today. And it started originally 40 years ago with a bunch of people with great talent and skill came together and started asking this powerful question, what if? What if we created ubiquitous access to technology and cheap, affordable technology, what will then happen? And that's what we did with the PC and the PC on every desk. And frankly, we've been amazed by what people have been able to do with that and the industry it sparked with. And they never stopped amazing us. But then also, we then have to look at what's next. And although all of us now are pretty used to using super advanced technology everywhere, there's still billions and billions of people that doesn't have access to it, either because of its complexity or cost or limitations of time and place. And so for us, it's quite clear what the next challenge is. And that's fixing that problem. But before we do that, let's dive into what we believe in, what our worldview is. And we believe that we have to sort of take into account the world as it is, but also the future that we want to create together with you. And that's a mobile-first, cloud-first world. And mobile, we're not thinking about the phones and the devices, you know, everyone does that, but have you ever thought of leaving your mobile phone at home? How mobile is it really? It is not mobile at all. You have to drive back home to get it, to get your job done, or to start phoning. But we're thinking rather of mobile as mobile in experiences. Think about wherever you do, whatever you are doing, the experience that you need to do that either it's in your personal life or it's in your professional life, you should be able to do. And the phone or the big screen or whatever you fancy start end up doing interaction with that digital content, that experience flows with you. And for that to happen, you really need to leverage the cloud, because that's the orchestrator. That's where information is handled through. That's where it resides. That's where it can be distributed to all the devices that you are using. And so that's sort of shaping up the high level premise of what we're working on. And then if you think about empowering every person on the planet to do more, then there's three big themes that sort of governs how we structure our innovation and the work and the solutions that we're bringing to market. And that is that we need to reinvent productivity and business process. That's what Harvard Business Review is talking about. That's what we're seeing when industries are now changing, when middle layers are taken out of value chains, that new offerings comes to market. That's around the business process and productivity. And then we obviously need to create a more personal computing. By more personal computing, we means that whatever sort of your needs, requirements, or ways of interacting with technology is, we need to power that. So it should be as easy and natural for you to talk to a device, talk out in the room, and have information flow through you by the use of smart intelligent systems as it is to talk to a person, but leveraging the machine capabilities. And to be able to fuel all that and power all that, we need to have a much smarter, intelligent cloud platform. And all the innovations that we've seen so far typically has been very physical, obvious. This has been a small, smarter phone or a new tablet or a Surface or whatever. That's where the focus has been. But through what we're seeing, and with the power of the cloud and new devices and new surfaces to show and interact with things, we believe that an invisible revolution is coming. And as technology is moved from the forefront to the back, but it at the same time becomes more powerful, we're talking about the ambience intelligence, meaning that the surroundings that you are in, for instance, your car will become a lot smarter. And we will equip the cars with the ability to be smarter on your behalf. So it will be safer. It will pollute less. It will perhaps be useful in more scenarios than what it is today. But it won't be something that you will see a crazy flying car necessarily. But you'll see the car, but it will be a lot smarter. And you will see all the devices that you are using on an everyday basis become smarter as well. But even more fundamental than looking at the things we see around us today, what we're trying to solve is the deeper, more challenging things that we will see come up ahead. Because there's been some few things that has absolutely driven the reality that we see around us. Moore's law is one of them. So doubling processor capacity every 18 months. But we're now getting to the end of Moore's law, because it's physical limitations on the atomic level, so you can't create chips more dense, more powerful when you come to the end of Moore's law. So what you do then? Because it's quite clear that a lot of what we're seeing around us now is powered by super smart, capable machinery. And if that smartness coupled with the reduction in price ends, we have to think of something else. And there's and why it's important to start now, because as I said initially, things do take longer than most people think. So I'll give you an example. We started in the year 2000 to invest heavily in speech recognition. So to be able to interact and have a conversation with a system or a computer. And then we spend about 15 years researching that and creating more and more smarter system that understands human speech, because we deeply believe that to have more people more naturally interact with computers, you have to have more natural ways of interaction. Then about 2015, Satya said, we have to go big in this and make this available. And I don't know if at least the guys in Norway remembers the commercial from Netcom a few years back, where there was a small little kid that was lost in a foreign city. But he had a phone, and he met some police officers, and the police officers dialed his number, and because of machine translation, they were able to talk to each other. We've done that already. So hold on a second. So we've done that in Skype, but it took about 20 years to do. So I'll get back to that in a second. So the first major challenge that we're now seeing is the limits of time. And of all the resources we talk about in our daily lives and also for the planet, time is non-replenishable. Time is a finite resource for most people, which means that in this abundance of information, distractions, and things that we can spend our time on, if we are able to spend our time on smarter things with higher quality, our lives will improve. But I'll give you an example. Every minute uploaded to YouTube, I think it's about 3 days of viewing, 3 or 4 days of viewing every minute, means that information and distractions and data is exploding at a pace that we can't even imagine. And for that to be useful in any meaningful way, we have to find a way for us to navigate that information structure. So we need to have better search, better machine learning, and better UI to be able to interact with that information. And that's some of the stuff we're working on. And as an example, this is a picture of HoloLens. I don't know if you've seen HoloLens, but it's a new wearable computing device that sort of mirrors the digital world with the physical world. And this is an example of a guy wearing HoloLens. You see he has it on his head right there. And this is Mars data. So here's what we've taken data that's really available because of our exploration on Mars, but we don't have to travel there. So we can create meaningful simulations that are making us able to interact as if we were on Mars without having to go there. Another partner of us, this is Volvo, and what they're doing with HoloLens.
Through the HoloLens, you can see how the cars perceives you. And then, you know, you give me as a human being the vantage point of a sensor. It helps to build a much better trust in this type of systems.
For example, you see a car coming in front of you. The car has features that could aid in that situation. We have a lot of features that we don't necessarily want you to experience it all, but it's part of our proposition. You're buying into the safest car brand in the world.
So this is how they are giving their customers a new way of discovering all the features of a Volvo car. But it also gives their designers an ability to design in a virtual environment, but close to physical, and that way create better designs and safer designs. And it's quite interesting that they're running a survey right now. It's on the net. You can actually use the link and you can go there. But it's an overwhelming response from more than 25,000 people saying that they believe that advances in technologies in cars will make them safer, make it more secure for their families. But it's also interesting that only about a quarter thinks that that's going to happen through a computer company. And that's sort of a differentiator between Microsoft and some of our competitors, because we are building the platforms and the tools that Volvo, which knows cars, can use in combination with our platform to create safer cars for all of us. But we don't think that necessarily going to be how it's going to be in the future, that you have to wear this large headgear. We think that advances in technology will make surfaces like a table or stuff we haven't thought about yet be able to relay information and that we can interact with, either through eye gestures, contact lenses that can project information, new surfaces. And that's some of what Microsoft research is researching. So back to Jonas Gahr Støre and his positive view on technology. There's been a lot of stuff in the news as of lately of technology replacing us humans. Now, humans have great capacity and are great at many things. Computing is not one of them. So our philosophy is that what can we do if we ask the question, what if? What if we were able to augment? What if we were able to use computers to augment our ability so that we become smarter and can do more? And that's some of the stuff that we're working on right now, so that we enhance and amplify our abilities. So what's interesting is that we get all our sensory inputs from our eyes and our senses. But if you look at our senses compared to animals, we are pretty infantile. We have very limited vision, we have very limited sensors to many, many, many things. If we use computers to augment that, we can do more, and our ability would be stronger, and then we can then have more richer, fulfilling lives. And speaking of all that information that's available, this is actually the Eye of Cortana, which is our artificial secretary or artificial intelligence that helps and learns about you and your daily lives. And this technology is actually alerting you to information. So let's say that they know that you are going to a meeting downtown in Oslo. Cortana would then know the traffic. And even though the meeting is at 3, she could say, well, it's now 1 o'clock. Based on traffic, I suggest that you leave now. That's a way of augment our ability to be at the right place at the right time. And this is something that we have already. This is the Skype example that I was showing you talking to you about, where you translate. So this is a Chinese guy speaking to an English guy, and they speak their own language in a natural way, and they can talk to each other without even knowing the other one's language. And it doesn't stop there. This is a video of where we're actually translating sign language. So with the sensor Kinect, which is now available on all the Xboxes and even for PCs, being used in hospitals, being used worldwide. There's actually, it was a news story a couple of weeks back where it was used by Sunnaas sykehus in training people that has disabilities or have been injured, training them back to health, because it can actually read and understand people's interactions with computers. And we believe that has powerful and significant opportunities going forward, and we're advancing that as well. I also briefly mentioned the limitations of computation. So Moore's law has been fueling this entire digital economy, and the whole reason why we're here is because it's a huge industry built around the intelligence and the capabilities and chips that are getting cheaper and cheaper. But we are coming to an end. So one of the things that we have been doing is we've looked at how can you compute smarter, not having smarter chips, but do processing smarter. And we've been able to create a new hardware chip that is able to half the computational resources for doubling the output. But even that's going to end. And to be able to leverage that, you have to have that in big data centers and have a cloud connecting to it. But even further than that, when Moore's law is ending, we need to find an alternative in our hunger for more computational capacity. And that's when we're thinking about stuff like quantum computing, holomorphic computing, systems that are resonating and understanding about themselves and the world, and that's super, super advanced artificial intelligence. So in our worldview and what we see around us, we believe that those innovations were visible. We believe that there's an invisible revolution coming. And this is a good quote from Arthur C. Clarke, the science fiction author, that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And by replacing that a little bit, our head of our research, Harry Shum, is saying that it disappears. It just becomes surrounding us everywhere and does magical stuff for us. If you think this is an interesting train of thought and you want to see what some of the best authors and science fiction writers in the world is doing based on the stuff that we are now doing in research, this is a free book. You could get it from Future Vision, or you can download it to Kindle, for instance. And it has some really thought-provoking sort of quotes and perspectives of what the future may look like. So now is the last little segment of what I'm going to talk about today, and this is about right now. This is taking all that lofty information you know, taking out the speed bumps, going faster than any human has done before, and be like Superman. This is like, what should you be doing right now? So I hope that you are now, as me, technology optimist, and I think you wouldn't be at Nick if you weren't. But it's quite clear to me that specifically around cloud, mobile, and big data, there's sufficient business opportunities. So the strategic opportunity is here. The big challenge is turning that into business innovations. And that's the coolest part of my job, when I get to speak to Norwegian companies and Norwegian partners and talk to them about their challenges or opportunities and how we can partner with them to make them come alive. Because what we do is we take all that research that I talked about, we take all that insight, and we take all those smart people's work and put it into a platform or put it into components that's like Lego, that you can then build together to serve your needs. Because we believe that what we are good at is creating that platform and doing those innovations and make them available in a simple and easy to use way so that you can get to do more. So that's sort of our value proposition. And one of the really cool examples of where we are right now is, this is Bent Gjesdal. He used to work in Skandiabanken, and he had this idea. So even though Skandiabanken is pretty advanced for a bank, he said, there's stuff here that we can do better. There's stuff here that we can do smarter. And so he brought with him a couple of guys, and then we started talking about realizing some of those ideas. And this is a true story. From he started developing to he was in market with the first new bank in Bergen in 117 years, it took 6 months. 6 months from, I have this idea, I want to start a bank, I want to serve my customers better, I want to serve them better because I want to be more innovative, I want to create better solutions, and I want to have used the knowledge that I have of my customers in a smarter way to serve their needs and our needs. And that took 6 months. And I don't know if any of you have started a bank before, but 6 months is a very, very, very short period of time. And what is he then competing against? He's competing against the big banks with thousands of employees that is sometimes not serving the customers the way they should be doing. So this is a story of both disruption and also the potential of using a platform that can make your idea come true. Arundo is another super, super exciting company, and everyone knows in Norway we're quite dependent on the oil, and we're struggling right now, frankly, and that's sad, but it's also a reality. And maybe for the planet or the greater good, it might be a good thing. But right now, there is a perfect storm. And I don't know how many of you knows this, but about the big oil rigs in the North Sea, hugely costly both to operate, to build, and have in production, are only operating with about 67%. So any percent improvement in their operations has huge, huge impact on profitability. And Arundo is 11 guys that had an idea. So we know something about getting information from sensors. We know something about how you can actually intelligently massage that information, and so that we can help get better uptime, improved profitability on investments already done. And there are 11 people. Leveraging a platform, they are able to go after a global market, because Norway isn't the only country struggling with this. All the other BRIC countries and oil-producing countries have the exact same situation. So here's an example of somebody who knows a little bit about the oil industry, knows a little bit about computers and the potential of analyzing information smarter and better, and leveraging a platform are able to go after a global market. And that, to me, is super exciting.
With 3 billion
this is,
people
how
moving
for
into
time?
The world
Five,
city,
10 minutes. The next 3 decades, the world needs tall buildings. Okay, then I'll let this video run. Elevators.
I'm Dr. Rory Smith with ThyssenKrupp Elevator, a leading global manufacturer. Maintaining over 1.1 million of these machines annually and keeping them running safely and reliably 24/7 is our job one. We wanted to better compete in our industry by offering dramatically increased uptime. So we're taking preventative maintenance a step further to predictive and even preemptive service. We teamed up with Microsoft and CGI to harness the Internet of Things, to collect data by connecting the sensors and systems in each of our elevators to the cloud. Microsoft Azure Intelligent Systems Service draws this data into a central cloud-based dashboard for a real-time view of key performance indicators. And Power BI for Office 365 provides rich data visualization, so we know which cabs need service and when. Microsoft Azure Machine Learning feeds data into dynamic predictive models so that elevators will actually be able to anticipate which repairs they need. Using an app on mobile devices in the field or the dashboard at one of our corporate control centers, all of our technicians see the same real-time information. Now we have the ability to use live data to define a needed repair before a breakdown happens, reducing costs for ourselves and for our customers, raising elevator reliability to new heights. That's the Internet of ThyssenKrupp's things, and it's here right now.
So what I think is exciting about this little story here is that, so here's a company that is providing elevators, and most people, and we have to build taller and taller to condense populations in cities where most people want to live. And think about the impact. So everything about the fourth floor is getting hard to reach if an elevator isn't running, and it was impossible to reach if you have any disabilities. So obviously the impact of having a service, a vertical people movement service available that has guaranteed uptime, will make all that working space available, or living space available. And if it's breaking down, it has a huge impact. So instead of providing elevators, they're providing vertical people transportation service. And that's just a mind shift in the way they are now thinking about what they're providing and what they are selling to their customers, leveraging technology. But obviously, not everyone is able to start from scratch like Muno Banco and Arundo. So a lot of people have already pre-invested in a lot of technology. And so what should you be thinking about when you want to progress forward? And I was recently at a seminar, and one BI professors talk about the death of all technology. And frankly, also the initial slide that I was showing said that all technology is sinking nations and civilizations. So obviously, the way it's been for years, you spend quite a lot of time and energy in maintaining technology, not providing a lot of service, because you've been asked every year to decrease funds to the IT investments, and so you're spending about 80-85% in just keeping the lights on. Very little innovation is happening. At the same time, you have companies like Arundo or Muno Bank or any a number of other companies that doesn't have to start from there and can start from what customer need do we want to serve and how are we going after that service. And so that's what you have to compete with, and that's when you need to think about how can we start leveraging cloud. How can we, instead of keeping investments going in our own data centers, how can we augment that? How can we add to it, so that we can start to more quickly turn stuff up and down? And the cost of not moving fast enough really isn't about the cost of buying the equipment and setting it up and, you know, the time you're spending, but it's really the cost of innovation. Because unless you are innovating, you are not following the customer demands. And so if you make it hard to innovate, so you have this great idea, but to realize it, you first have to go to finance and say, hey, I think this could be huge. I need $1 million budget. Then you have to go to IT. Hey, I got $1 million budget. How quickly can you get this up and running? And then it takes another 6 months. And then you can start the thought that you have or the innovation that you have and see if it comes to market. And if it fails, you spend a long time and it costs a lot of money. With the cloud, you don't have to do that. You start at the investments of zero and you can start right now. If it takes off, be sure that the cloud is there to scale with you. And you can actually, you know, go as big as you want to. And that's what the Rondo and Monobank is doing in my examples. But also, you should be looking at what can you stop doing? So of the stuff that's currently running in your data center, what is it that you don't have to do yourself? There's a bunch of really, really good services now, which typically often are better than the ones that you are spending all that time and resource providing today, that you can consume on a per user, per month, or per day, or per hour basis. And the model behind that is also very enticing for most companies. And that is that you pay for what you use. And think about that for a while. So many companies have had licensing scheme that, you know, runs 2 or 3 years ahead in time. So you invest in the opportunity to use some technology 3 years ahead of time. With this model, you can say, hey, last month I had 10 users, let me pay you this much of money. Next month I have 20, or I might have 5, but you pay for that after you've used it. And that's a much clearer sort of correlation between what you spend and what you gain. And for most companies, that's a really interesting value proposition. And better, or best of all, it keeps us on our toes. Because if we are not providing something that you deem valuable, you just won't pay us for it. And you can do that on a monthly basis. In Azure, which is one of the stuff, one of the products that I sort of oversee, you can pay by the minute. So the minute you're dissatisfied with something that we provide you, you turn it off and you don't have to pay me. And that's pretty interesting as a value proposition. And that's something you can do right now. So as I said, we're a platform company and we're here to help. So our fundamental belief is that what we can do together is more exciting than what we can do. So we're not saying that, oh, we should invent everything in the world, and oh, nobody has thought of self-driving cars, let's go and invent that and do some press stuff about that. We're thinking that there are people doing cars that could probably use our help in making them better. And I think that's a better value proposition. I think Arundo knows the oil industry and the specific needs of their customers a whole lot better than I do. But I know one or two things about the platform and the capabilities you need in terms of big data analysis, big storage, huge computing capacity. And if I can specialize in that and I can partner with Arundo, I think their customers and the oil industry in Norway and across the globe will have much better times ahead because we partner. This is my payoff slide for my sales pitch to you guys. It's a lot of really big numbers here in terms of return on investments and exciting things that we can do together. And I hope with this that I can entice you into either talk to us or talk to some of the partners that here at Nick or Crayon, which is hosting Nick, about stuff that we can do together. So that's the payoff slide. This is my final slide, and I'm amazed that I got through so many. I hope I didn't bore you too much. But as I started, I want to end. So I started by saying I'm a technology optimist. And this is something I share with all my colleagues in Microsoft and with our partners and with a lot of our customers. And I believe that there's never been a more exciting times for what we can do together. Have a look at this.
What is technology? What can it do?
When I lost my eyesight, I thought that my painting days were over.
How far can we go?
By using your hands, you can actually control your x-ray.
Technology has the power to unite us.
Hang on, honey. Hang on.
There he is.
You see him?
I can see him.
It inspires us. Technology has taken us places we've only dreamed.
Now I can do whatever I want.
It gives hope to the hopeless.
So your device is on. Can you hear me talking?
And it has given voice to the voiceless.
Takk for oppmerksomheten. Jeg håper det var litt nyttig å se hva vi tenker på og hva vi jobber med. Og så håper jeg det var så gøy at dere har lyst til å snakke mer om hva vi kan gjøre sammen. Tough mind.